It was interesting as we were going through. I was looking for that clip, and you can't help but come across some other home videos, you know. And several things we noticed. One is the children were much younger and cuter than we remembered at the time, you know. And then the other is that we had some shots of the inside of the house and such. It's like, wow, everything inside the house doesn't look destroyed. And, you know, since those videos were taken, we look at our house now, it's just been destroyed. You know, everything, it's just broken and it's just torn down. But I don't know if you could hear what Isaac had said there when Sarah was asking him, Isaac, what are you doing? And his response was, I'm mowing with my dad. You know, and so as I'm there cutting the grass, he's obviously, and you can see what he's doing. So every time I turn around, he turns around and he's kind of just following that same path. He had to follow, he used to try to follow me right behind me. Well, that didn't get to be safe because if I missed a spot and had to suddenly back up, then I step on him and things like that. And then he would also, they used to like to stand where all the grass comes flying out of the mower. And that, we know that that's just a bad idea, but they thought it was cool, you know, because all the grass. But so you see him following quite a ways away, and that reality there is because I had made him stay farther away. But so he's still following the lines, and every time I turn around, he makes sure he's watching. When Dad turns around, he's going to turn around. And we're going to kind of look at that a little bit this morning because we're going to see something that's similar. But I want us to think about, I want us to reflect a little bit back. For some of us, it's a long ways back. For some of us, it's just like immediate right now. But when you were younger, can you envision, can you remember what it is that you wanted to, we used to use the word be. What do you want to be when you grew up? I mean, did you want to be the proverbial policeman, firefighter? Some people have obviously followed that dream perhaps to come to fruition. But what is it you wanted to be? You know, for me, I wanted to be Superman. That's right. I wanted to be Superman. So what I would do when I was younger, my brother, I had a brother, he and I were very close in age. We had a younger brother too, but we didn't play with him because we were just too good. So what I would do is I'd find one of my mom's towels. And I would take one of my mom's towels because we didn't have, you know, capes per se. They didn't have costumes back in the day like they have costumes now. And if they did, they would still be destroyed. So I used to take one of my mom's towels, and then I would take it and I would tuck it in. Tuck it into the collar. It wouldn't stay there very long, but I would tuck it in the collar, and then my brother and I we would fly around, you know, fly as proverbial. We were smart enough where we didn't get onto the roof of the garage, which we could have. Because it was a low enough roof and try to fly off that. We were smart enough to not do that. But in every sense of the word, we would put on the cape, and then in our minds, we would become who it is that we wanted to be, and we wanted to become Superman, sometimes Batman, but for the most part, then we'd fight over who's going to be the right superhero. Well, it depended on what color of underoos we had on that we'd slip over our pajamas. Because once you put on the underoos on the outside, that is when the transition really became complete, and you became the superhero. You know, isn't that it's kind of like, who designed that? I mean, you know, really, you go back, I don't know, back in the 50s, I don't know when Superman first came, but really, what in the world possessed you to do that? So what we would do, we would do that, and we'd become, in a sense, Superman. We could do everything that Superman could do. We could fly. We could leap tall buildings in a single bound. We pretend we had our laser eyes and such. You know, but as much as I wanted to become like Superman, I could not be Superman. I could not fly. You know, and I know it's coming to a surprise to some of you because you look at me and it's like, well, I thought you were Superman, right? I remember when I was younger, I wanted to be, you know, like you see in the picture with Isaac there, I wanted to be like my dad. And so in different circumstances, when my dad would go deer hunting, I would, while he's gone for the day, I would take and I'd find my orange clothing, and I would put on my orange clothing, and I'd go up into a tree that we had on the property, and I would climb the tree, and I would bring along my toy Model 94 Winchester rifle, and I'd climb up into the tree, and I would sit there, and I would wait, and I'd wait, and I'd wait. I stayed up there probably about 3 minutes. And then I would get cold, or I would get bored, and I would come down, and then I'd either decide to walk the driveway, and my mom would yell at me because she's mad because we lived out in the country, and so there was hunters all over the place, and so she was angry with me that I was walking down the driveway and get hit by a stray bullet. That's how moms are. Not likely going to happen, but I suppose it could happen. And then, or I'd either get cold and go for a walk, or I'd come in because I wanted hot chocolate, and so I'd have hot chocolate. So my hunting didn't necessarily last long, but I remember wanting to be like him and the things that he did. And when I was younger, my dad smoked cigarettes. And to his credit, and to certainly his benefit as well as my benefit, he quit smoking before he hit the age of 30, which I'm very thankful for. But in that process, I still have memories of when he would smoke cigarettes. And there was one time in particular, he was sitting at the table And that's where he'd have his ashtray. He's sitting at the table. So he's sitting at the table, and he has his ashtray here. And I don't know how this dynamic occurred. I don't remember if I asked or if he invited. I'm going to say I asked, because if he invited, then he's a really bad father. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and we'll say that I asked, and I said, can I try it? And so he hands me the cigarette, and so I take the cigarette. Now, I don't remember my age, but at this young age, I take it and I put it between my lips, and I start biting it. Because I did not know how cigarettes got shorter. So I assumed that somehow my dad was consuming the cigarette, is really what I was thinking, okay? So I start biting it, gnawing on it. He says, no, no, and he takes it away from me. He says, no, you got to suck on it. Well, that was kind of the end of it for the most part. Well, he's sitting in the ashtray. He gets a phone call, and so he's talking on the phone. And here's this cigarette, still have the bite marks in the filter portion. And while he's on the phone, I take it, and I suck on it. Big, big long drag. Oh, wow. I had no idea. Why would anyone want to choose to do that? Because at that young age, I mean, I probably had smoke coming out of my ears, you know. But it was like that. I wanted to be like him. You know, I wanted to experience the things that he was experiencing, you know. And so you see whatever he does, and that's a huge responsibility when you look at it for a father. It's like, wow, this kid is watching everything that I do, like Isaac there. I even look back and I watch him. It's like he was watching me way closer than I ever realized that he was watching me. And that's a huge responsibility. You know, also to my dad's credit, he quit smoking and I didn't start. How about that? Well, we can say because I tried to eat the cigarette, it totally affected me, and so I was able to get beyond that. You know, but I think the reality is, I think we all, at least at one time, and maybe still to an extent now, we all wanted to or want to be like someone. You know, there's something somewhat intrinsically, when you're a child, you look at other people, even if you're a teen, and even as adults, I think sometimes we look at people, it's like, I would like to be more like that person. You know, and so sometimes we turn our lives, we revolve our lives to become more like that person. I think you see it all the time in middle school and high school, where you have a bunch of, you know, preteens and teenagers, and they look at these people groups, they look at these friend groups, it's like, that's the girl that I want to be like. That's the guy that I wish I was more like. And we start to model ourselves to that, we conform, we try to be like that person. You look at a little girl or a little boy, it's very common that they would want to be like their mom or their dad. It's a constant cycle, I think, that we find, that people are always trying to be like someone. And the reality of it is, and it's kind of an unfortunate reality, I think many people are this comes because they're very dissatisfied with who they are. You know, when they start to look inwardly, I don't like to see who I am inwardly, so I'm going to look outwardly and see them and try to be more like them, because then maybe I will like myself a little bit better if I was more like them. But what we're going to see this morning is, we are going to see this fabulous encounter of a very popular, very well-known piece of scripture for many people. But we're going to see one of Jesus' disciples go to great lengths to be like Jesus. And so these last couple of weeks we've been talking about, Jesus had this discourse, and Chris led us through that, where Jesus was talking about who he was, that he really was who he was, and he gave the testimonies of other people, of Moses and his works and the Father and the scriptures, all pointing back to that Jesus is in fact who he says that he is. And then we went on last week and we looked at this idea that Jesus is really the one that provides everything that we need. He gives us, and he gives abundantly. And the people had nothing to eat, and Jesus provided them for something to eat because he saw his compassion, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So we're going to get started this morning. We're going to look at two parallel passages of Scripture. So we're talking about Jesus. He walks on water this morning. You know, I'd asked some of the elders if they would be willing to demonstrate what that would look like, and so we'd bring in water. They all refused. They felt like it was too much pressure, I guess. But the reality of it is, we're going to see Jesus walk on water. And in this process of Jesus walking on water, we're going to see Peter do some fabulous, amazing things. But I want us to catch, as we get in there, we're going to look at the John 6 passage, we're going to look at the Matthew 14 passage, really side by side. We're going to pull in some other scriptures here too. We're going to pull in some scriptures from the Old Testament that I hope you are ready for, because they're just fascinating. It's just fabulous where it looks at the Old Testament, how it describes God. And then you see that it's not prophetic, but you see how then Jesus kind of epitomizes these descriptors of what God was in the Old Testament. It's fabulous. It's mind-blowing. You'll love it. love it. So we're going to move on here. We're going to get started. So in John chapter 6, this is verse 15. This is precedes, when you break it out in your Bible, you're probably going to see this verse just slid slightly up from where it says Jesus walking on the water, if you have your Bibles open. But this is important to note because what just happened, Jesus just fed 5,000 men plus women and children. Important to note because now what he's got all kinds of people that are think he's really cool. You know, he just gave these people, 15,000 perhaps, all full bellies. They're very excited about what he has just done. They have seen some of these other miraculous signs that he has done. They know that he can provide food, which is like, food's important. Food's helpful. I ate there like I've never eaten before. That was all last week. And so he's got this popularity behind Jesus that is probably about at its pinnacle. And we're going to see next week and the week after, he's going to do some things that are just going to like shoot it down. It's wonderful. But here what we're looking at then, so Jesus knows what's in their hearts. He knows the stirrings that they have. He knows the excitement that they have about this Jesus who's giving them all this food. But so Jesus, knowing that they intend to make him to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. This is amazing. Our culture teaches be popular, you know, get as many likes on Facebook as you can. You know what I'm saying? You know, so Jesus in the Facebook culture would have a lot of likes right now, okay? He would probably have gone viral, all right? And so this whole experience is like he's got this support, and in the midst of the support, Jesus is basically saying, no, this is not my time, that is not for me. And he pulls away from the popularity. And that's so important to note because with this many people coming behind him, you know, he can heal the sick. So if any of them is sick, he can heal them. He can feed them. You know, what does an army need to really overthrow the government? Unlimited resources, and Jesus can provide that. You know, all we need is a loaf of bread. And he's going to feed us and feed us and feed us. We'll never be hungry. Hey, if any of us gets injured or sick, he can heal us. I mean, this is the perfect army, if you will, to overthrow the Roman government. And so there's this huge excitement coming up behind him. Jesus knows that this is what they want to do. Make him king to overthrow the Romans. That's not why he's here. And so he's going to change that. And he pulls away from what we would see as like, wow, he's supposed to come and be the king? Yeah, but not in the way that they want it. And so we see him pull away. And so he withdrew again to a mountain to be by himself. And as you recall last week, we entered into what Jesus had just encountered. He had just heard that his cousin, his deep friend, John the Baptist, had been killed. And he still hadn't had a chance to mourn that, because right after that, all these people come and he feeds them, has compassion on them. He still hasn't had a chance to be by himself, to grieve this process. And so now you see him, he's going to send the crowd away, and he's going to find some time to mourn, to be by himself and to pray. But you can't diminish the fact that this would have been a huge temptation for Jesus to say, all right, I have all these people, I have all this support, we're going in this direction, let's go with this. And so then as we move on, am I on yet? Yes, there we go. So in Matthew 14, so we're going to be going back and forth like we did last week. We're going to see the Matthew 14 account of Jesus walking on the water. We're going to see the John 6 account of Jesus walking on the water. If you have your Bibles, you want to flip back and forth, that's fine. I have most all the scriptures up here on the screen to help you as well. So what we see here is immediately then, this is right after the feeding of the 5,000 people, immediately it says, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. This is an important piece to note. I believe that Jesus already knows, he already has in mind what he's going to do. Okay? I mean, he could have gone with the disciples, but there's something more here that he is very intentional on doing. This is not an accident. This is not an afterthought on Jesus' part. This is on purpose. Jesus has all of his disciples get into the boat and head across the lake. And then he knows full well what he's going to do to them, and then for them thereafter. So it's important to keep that in your mind. This is an on-purpose moment here. All right, guys, you get in the boat. You're going to head across over to Capernaum. I am going to go and be alone on the mountainside. And so he goes and dismisses the crowd. Here's what John says about it. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake where they got into a boat and they set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was getting dark and Jesus had not yet joined them. So here's the scene. All the disciples are in a boat. They're on the lake. Jesus is still on land by himself, pulls up to a mountainside to pray. He's having his alone time. He's having his quiet time. Give you a little picture of the map. We had this map up last week as well. And so remember we talked about there's two Bethsaidas. We don't necessarily know which Bethsaida that this feeding of the 5,000 took place on. There's schools of thought for both. That's fine. It doesn't diminish the story one way or the other on whichever it was. I personally, I can be talked out of it probably, but I lean toward this is where that feeding of the 5,000 was. And the reason I kind of do that is it says that they're heading to Capernaum. And later it's going to say they ended up in Gennesaret. And so it seems like that's just the natural progression. There's other factors that could play into that. So this is not, you know, a make or break situation, but it gives you a little bit of an idea. And so what we're looking at is this is where they're going to be crossing. You know, and it looks like that's just a short snippet, and that would be a fair distance here. I believe that we're looking at 14 miles or so across this way, and I want to say 8 miles, if my memory serves me correct, that way. Just looking at how big this lake is. Good-sized lake. And so when you look at even a short snippet like that, that's a pretty good chunk. And so what we then find is in Matthew 14, he says, after he had dismissed them, this is Jesus, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone. Verse 24. So in the boat, when he was alone in the boat, verse 24 says, was already a considerable distance from land. And it was buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Now, it's important to note, there's not a storm. There's not necessarily, it doesn't specify a storm in the sense of rain and thunder and lightning. Sometimes we attribute that to this. But there is a strong wind. Consider this a big lake in the middle of South Dakota where it's always perpetually windy. You've been to South Dakota? It's nuts. Okay, my brother lives in South Dakota. Every time we go there, I just like, how do you live here with all this wind? You're in a constant lean as you're walking because you're really honest. It feels like you're going to get blown away. We were there 1 year, and I'm not kidding. It's always windy. And we're driving by, and a whole roof blew off a house. And nobody seemed to care. It's just like, I'm saying, doesn't that seem significant? And it seemed like, whatever. I suppose North Dakota is the same thing, but I don't really get to North Dakota very often. So the boat was already a considerable distance away, and it's being buffeted by this wind. In other words, this wind is just pounding at it. And these are not, they don't have the sails up in a wind like this. Even if there were sails in this boat, which I don't know if there were, they're at oars. And so they're struggling. Have you ever been in a rowboat? Rowboats are kind of a lost art right now, you know? You know, the only time we use a rowboat is when the motor doesn't start. You know what I'm saying? You know, and so they're rowing. And these have been experienced rowers. They would have done this before, and they're fishermen. They're experienced in the water. They know what they're doing. They know how it feels in the water. They know how to get from point A to point B, and so they're struggling against the oars, against this strong wind that's beating against them. In John 6, it says this, a strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough, and I think this is significantly rough, the fact that they can't go. I have a small boat, 7.5 horsepower, 1956 Evinrude. And it goes, it'll max out about 6 miles an hour. 8 if I go with the wind downstream, okay? But otherwise, it's about 6 miles an hour. The first time I ever took it out, I was an idiot. I took it out on a big body of water in a strong wind, and I couldn't control that thing for the life of me. I was all over the place, you know, because the wind just kind of, it had its way. And this is a powerboat. Can you imagine with a rowboat? And this is really what we're looking at. I mean, this is a strong, strong situation, strong wind that they're facing. So when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were frightened. They were terrified, as the other gospels say. So they're already intense, okay? They've been rowing for about 3 to 4 miles. What we're going to see here in a little bit is the reality is they've been rowing for what should have taken them about an hour. It's basically taken them about 9+ hours. So they're stuck in the water, rowing and rowing and rowing for about 9+ hours. It says that they took off, would have been about 6 o'clock in the p.m., Jesus doesn't meet them, we're going to see in just a moment, doesn't meet them until somewhere between 3 to 6 a.m. So somewhere to 9 to 12 hours, they're out on the water, rowing, fighting this wind. That's exhausting. You know, they're just getting pounded and pounded. And they were probably, even though they were experienced fishermen, they're probably on edge a little bit. They're probably afraid with these strong winds, if that boat capsizes, will they make it? Maybe, maybe not. They didn't have life jackets. Their only hope would have been in holding on to the boat. Waves like that and the boats that they would have had very likely could have pounded the boat apart. And so they would have been left with scraps to hang on to. Those are realities. And so as they're struggling in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, their minds are gone, they're physically spent. Here comes Jesus walking on the water, and they're frightened because they think it's a ghost. This is what it says in Matthew. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. This is fascinating. This is Job, Job 9. In Job, you're going to find a number of different scenarios, different passages that kind of give these descriptors of who God is. God does this. God is like this. God is like this. You get a bunch of metaphors in there, and it kind of challenges Job, who do you think you are in relation to me? Well, this is one of the verses we find in Job chapter 9, verse 8. It says, God, this is the he, God alone stretches out the heavens. In other words, God is the one that created the heavens. He's the one that drew them out. He stretched them out. And then it says, and treads on the waves of the sea. The disciples would have known these scriptures. I'm not saying they're prophetic, but the disciples would have known these scriptures. They would have known that God is the one who, in a sense, walks on the water. And now here they see Jesus. They don't know it's him yet. They see Jesus coming, walking on the water. This is a powerful image. And it says, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. And they cried out, "It's a ghost!" And they were in great fear. Totally afraid for their lives. Matthew 14 and John 6, these are very close. I put them side by side because this is a key moment. And it says, but Jesus then, he sees them, he knows that they're afraid. And so Jesus, to comfort them, to console them, he immediately says to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." And in John it says this, but he said to them, "It is I, don't be afraid." The Greek word here is ego eimi, which translates literally, that Jesus is coming to them. The literal translation is, "I am." You know, what a powerful statement. Here they know that God is the one that treads. And again, I'm not reading too much into this. I'm not saying it's prophetic. That's not where I'm going at. But you got to understand who God is described to be in the Old Testament and now who this man is coming, walking on the water, treading on the water, calling out to them, "Hey, take courage. I am." In other words, this God of the Old Testament that you have known, this God of the Old Testament that has taken care of you, "I am treading on the water. I've got this. You don't need to be afraid. I know your life may be totally consumed with waves and bashing. It feels like you're trying to move forward in your life. You're trying to follow Christ. And as you continue to move forward, you continue to try to follow Christ, all you feel is the waves bashing and bashing and bashing and bashing against your boat. And you feel like you're going nowhere and it stinks. And then sometimes maybe you're afraid because you see some things. Maybe you see some things that you're like, I think that this may be from God, but I'm so afraid. I don't know that I want to trust him in that capacity. And yet there he is, saying, "It's okay. I know life is hard, but I got this. I am." Right there in your midst. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that fabulous? And so we get to Matthew 14 then. And Peter, now this is what blows my mind, because I can see Peter either at the rudder, you know, steering this boat, or he's at the oars, and there's waves, okay? They didn't suddenly get peaceful and they're having this casual conversation. Here's this man calling to them. He says, "You guys, relax. I am. It's Jesus. It's me. God in your midst. God in the flesh." And Peter, in all of his infinite bravery and wisdom, says, "Lord, if it's really you, have me come to you." You know, I'm not a good swimmer. You know, I'm a pretty good sinker, is really what it turns out to be. You know, people say, "Do you take swimming lessons?" No, I took sinking lessons. But there's this reality. I don't think I would ever do that. And yet Peter's the one, according to the scriptures, Peter's the one that says, "Lord, if it's you, ask me to come to you." It's not the other way around, because that would change things. That would change some things if Jesus said, "It's me, I am. Guys, get out of the boat and come over to me." I mean, that changes it a little bit, because Jesus has already given them the instruction. It does. But instead, Peter's saying, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come." And this is a huge key point. Just like Isaac following me with the mower. Because we've talked about this a number of weeks ago, even months ago now. The disciples, when they followed their rabbi, when they followed their teacher, you know, they would have this phrase that would often be shared. They would say, "May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi." In other words, may you follow your rabbi, your teacher, so closely that literally the dust that he kicks up behind him as he's walking settles on you, and you find yourself covered in his dust because you're following him so closely. In other words, you're being so much like him. Peter's got this rabbi, this teacher who he loves and respects. He's seen this rabbi do amazing things. Peter says to him, Lord, I want to be like my rabbi. I want to be like you. I want to do the things that you do. So if it's really you, if you're really the rabbi that I've chosen to follow, ask me to come to you, and I will be like you, and I will walk on the water. And Jesus says to him, come. And then he decides to actually come. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we make these meaningless threats. Oh, yeah, I would do that. You know, oh, yeah, I could jump over that. Then try it. Wait, not really. So Peter, Jesus says, come. And Peter got down out of the boat. Can you imagine what that would have been like? You got the wind and you got the waves. And here's Peter sitting on the edge of the boat. He's got to stand up and he's got to step over the side of the boat and down onto the water, trusting that the water is going to hold him. And he does it. And the water does hold him because it's going to say that he was walking on the water. He was being like Jesus. But then what we end up finding is, even in the midst of him choosing to be like Jesus, the wind and the waves were still something real in his life. They didn't just go away. His life is still being pounded. His boat is still being pounded by everything that life has to throw at him. Boom, boom, boom. How many times do we go through our lives like, yes, I want to follow Jesus. Jesus is calling me here. I know that this is what Jesus wants me to do, but I look at life and life is so hard and we get distracted. We get overwhelmed, and I get that. That's human nature. Peter, a great disciple, we see him do many things amazing in the scripture. The fact that he got out of the boat is amazing in itself, that he had enough faith to do that. And yet he is pounded by all these things of life, and he finds himself in a very precarious situation. But when he saw the wind, it says, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cries out, Lord, save me. Sometimes I think in the midst of our lives as we're feeling that heaviness, life is just overwhelming. I don't know what to do. I can't handle it. I'm just so exhausted. Sometimes it's just okay to just say, Lord, save me. I got nothing. A couple of fascinating passages out of the Psalms I want to read for you. Yeah, I don't have them on the screen. But again, looking at this picture that the Lord has given to us of him in the scriptures. So this is a psalm written by David. And this is what it says in Psalm 69, verses 1 through 3. It says, save me, O God. You see a parallel already. David crying out, save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in the miry depths where there is no foothold. I have come into the deep waters. The floods engulf me. I am worn out, calling for help. My throat is parched. My eyes fail, looking for you, my God. You see, feel the heart of David, the man who is after God's own heart. Is it uplifted at that point? No. In your life, we're going to have these times where the waves are just pounding on us. And yet, even in the midst of that, Lord, oh, it's got to be you that saves me. It's got to be you that does something. And then real quickly, over in Psalm 107, verses 24 through 30. This is what it says. So they saw the works of the Lord, his wonderful deeds in the deep. For God spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. Remember when I said Jesus knew what was going to happen? I would say so much so, in fact, that I believe that Jesus intentionally caused the storm and the waves that the disciples would engage in. And that's hard for us to look at. That's hard for us to comprehend. But I do believe that Jesus knew that was going to happen. And in fact, even caused it to happen. It's like, hey, guys, get in this boat. I'm going to send you out on the water. And then I'm going to have this huge storm come up. It's going to be a riot. You know, there's a reality to it. I just bumped it, didn't I? Can you get me back to verse 30, Kim? I did bad things. But can you imagine Jesus, knowing that ahead of time, he sends these guys out. It's like, it's okay. I know you're going to be afraid. I know you're going to be overwhelmed, but I've got it. I've got it. Let me finish that 107. Because I didn't get very far. They mounted up to the heavens and went, these are the waves, and went down to the depths in the peril. Their courage melted away. There's the disciples. You can see it in there. They reeled and staggered like drunken men. They were at their wits' end. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven. There's where you see this Old Testament picture of what God is like. And here are the disciples sitting in this boat with all this stuff happening. They know that that's what God can do. And now he's going to see Jesus do exactly what God can do. In other words, Jesus is exactly who he says he is. So when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' feet. Remember this Luke 5 passage? This is back when the miraculous catch of fish. All right, way back when Jesus was first calling his disciples, Jesus says, cast your nets on the other side of the boat. They do this, okay? And they catch this miraculous. Peter has this epiphany at this moment. He caught all this fish and he says to the Lord, Lord, away from me, for I recognize your holiness and my sinfulness. I'm quite convinced that at this point here, he's having a very similar feeling, a very similar moment. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and he caught him. And he said, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Even in the midst, okay? Peter had a lack of faith. Was it a lack of faith in Jesus? Probably not, because Jesus is still on the water and Peter is not on the water. He is sinking. So somewhere in there, Peter's having a lack of faith that he can actually be what Jesus has called him to be, that he can actually be like his rabbi. He's like, I can't do this. I'm not worthy to do this. I'm sinful. And yet Jesus reaches out his hand and he says, why did you doubt? In other words, I've got you. And then we see this amazing picture. Look at this. John 10, verse 28. He says, this is God, Jesus, I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. Boom. He's got Peter. Peter, you're not going anywhere. I've got you. I know all the waves and all the things in life that are just beating you up, but I've got you even in this. He reaches his hand down, and he holds on, and nothing is going to snatch Peter out of Jesus' hand. And likewise, nothing is going to snatch you out of God's hand. And some of us need to hear that this morning. Some of us need to hear and believe that nothing is going to snatch you out of the Lord's hand. Verse 32, and when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then you see that passage in Psalm 107. God's the one that calms those things down. And John 6, it says, then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately, some believe this is another miracle that's testified into the scripture, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. So just like that, they were done. Everything was calm. He changed it. But he didn't just change it like boom, like there, whatever. You understand what I'm saying? The waves still existed throughout that, and God's got his timing on things, and so I don't know what all he's going to do. He's not going to just take away all of your waves at the given moment. But there's going to come a time where I believe that he's going to do something. Maybe that's removing some things in your life that are causing the waves. Maybe. But maybe it's also just keeping that hand there and letting you hold on to that hand and having him hold on to your hand even in the midst of the waves. Because that's a reality that we see in the scriptures as well. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. This is so important. Because I think when we come to truly worship Jesus, it will deepen our relationship with him. I think that's so key. When we can truly come, and they got it. They saw it. And what did they do? How did they respond? They worshiped him. When we truly can come to worship Jesus, it'll deepen our relationship with him. When we worship him, we will attain a deeper experience of his love, and we will love him in a deeper way. I'm so convinced of that. And again, then you see it. This is Luke 5. After they catch the fish, Peter gets it. He falls on his face and he says, away from me, Lord. You're so worthy and I'm not worthy. And yet Jesus says, I've got you. You're in my hand. I'm not letting it go. I want to wrap up. There's basically three conclusions I'd like to pull in. One is this idea of being like Christ. Peter obviously wanted to be like his rabbi. Like Isaac following me with the mower, it's evident that he wants to be like me. Like me when the choices that I made to try to become like my father. And so as fathers, as parents, we have a huge responsibility that these children are looking at us and watching us. But we can't lead well. We can't be that kind of a parent, because I look back at those, it's like, oh, I wish I'd done so many things differently when I watch those home videos. They're very hard to watch, because you see the kids, and they're so young and cute, and you kind of want to go back to those days for a day, you know, just for a day, maybe even an hour, depends on how they were that day. But there's a reality there where you kind of want to revert back to it because you miss those days. But I also look back and it's like, I should have done so many things differently. You know, so I get that. But the reality is if I'm going to live a life that is worthy to be followed, then I better be following someone who's worthy to be followed. And that's Christ. And that's where you look at Peter. And Peter was following someone who was worthy to be followed. Did he follow him perfectly? Absolutely not, because that's why he was sinking. Are you going to follow Jesus perfectly? Absolutely not. You're going to make mistakes. But even in the midst of that, we can take courage knowing that, oh, I'm such, we saw it in the Luke 5 passage, away from me, God, because I am a sinner. Yet he's got us and nothing can snatch us away. That's a huge piece. We're being followed. Whether you realize it or not, you're being followed. And sometimes we don't open our eyes enough to see that we are being followed. And if we're going to be followed, we better know who we're following. The other piece that I want us to grasp this morning is the, and I've hit it hard, but this reality that in the midst of our lives, in the midst of the trouble, in the midst of the waves that we face in our life, it's hard. And sometimes we're just like, life isn't supposed to be this hard. Well, it is since the fall of man. But other than that, I mean, Jesus says, in this life you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. But in the midst, we can take courage and trust that he's got us in his hand. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. I might feel like I'm going somewhere. I might feel like I'm going down hard, but I'm in his hand. I'm good. I might feel awful. I might be afraid, but I'm still in his hand. I'm okay there. We need to understand that I'm okay there. And he's going to pull us up, and he's going to do the stuff with our life that only he can do. So I think we need to understand that. And the final one is this idea of worship. When we come to this realization of who we are and our depravity that we saw in the Luke 5 passage where I'm sinful. Compared to you, God, I'm sinful. And we see it as Jesus comes into the boat, and all these disciples can do is to fall down and worship him. Are you worshiping the Lord? Because it's when you worship the Lord, when you find that connection with him, that is where you're going to fall in love with him. That is where you're going to understand him deeper. That is such a passion. Sometimes we look at the kind of music that they play or don't play, the kind of music that we sing. That's so beyond it, okay? Jesus is so much deeper than the type of music that we're singing along to. I know we all have styles that we like. I get that. But there's a reality, there's depth to it where it's just like, I'm just going to worship you, Jesus, for who you are. I'm just going to worship you. Because I recognize you're the one that's got my hand. I maybe think I'm in control of this boat, rowing that boat. Remember, I did that a couple weeks ago. I'm going nowhere. You know, buffeted by the wind, buffeted by the waves, buffeted by everything else in life. I'm going nowhere until Jesus, you decide to actually take us where we need to go. It's a huge difference. So I'm going to invite Kevin and the worship team up, and we're going to worship. And then I'll close us off afterwards. But I just pray that you can reflect on that. You can find a way to worship the Lord this morning in truth, that it will deepen your relationship and deepen your love and help you to understand the love that he has for you. I also pray that you'll find this time as you're worshiping, that if life is just bashing you to pieces, that you can find that way to say, Lord, save me. Reach out your hand and allow him to just take it and say, I've got you. I've got you. And maybe you're here this morning, it's like you've been challenged, like, you know, my life, I need to be following Christ, because as I follow him, people are going to be following me. And that's important.